This is an RNZ podcast.
Australia's public broadcaster has its hands full at the moment. The country is in the middle of an intense election campaign, and the ABC knows that both major parties likely to lead the next government are watching their coverage like hawks. For years, the incumbent Liberal Party has been on the ABC's case, cutting its budget, launching reviews and complaining about the fairness and accuracy of its journalism. The opposition Labor Party, by contrast, has promised to reverse those cuts and guarantee stable funding for the ABC's future, increasing suspicions that it might get an easier ride from the ABC during the campaign. But while Australia works out who will lead the country next, the ABC itself has been leaderless for months, up until last week. Late last year, the ABC's managing director was sacked 2 years into a five-year term after persistent reports that the former Google executive who was parachuted into the job, Michelle Guthrie, was not getting on with senior staff and journalists. And when she was gone, some didn't hide their feelings. One radio presenter for the ABC in Victoria, for example, John Fain, unloaded on the air like this.
She was refusing to conduct any interviews on air. She would not take on her role as a champion for this organisation publicly. She would not advocate for us in the public domain, in the public space, which was an astonishing fail, which is an extraordinary thing for someone paid $1 million a year to run the most important cultural institution in the nation.
And it turned out that Michelle Guthrie wasn't getting on with her board of governors either. After they sacked her, the chair, Justin Milne, cited her leadership style as the problem. But so was his. A week later, Justin Milne himself resigned in the wake of a huge controversy about political interference. The Sydney Morning Herald revealed emails in which he had urged Michelle Guthrie to shoot an economics correspondent and get rid of a political editor, both of whom had rubbed the government up the wrong way with their reporting in the recent past. And after 5 months without a board chair, the ABC finally appointed media veteran Ita Buttrose in February. The former magazine editor and broadcaster immediately said she would restore the ABC's stability.
It's time to get the ABC functioning again with proper stable management and good, frank discussion between the chair and whoever is the managing director.
And late last week, the ABC, at long last, appointed a new managing director. David Anderson has 30 years' experience with the ABC. Formerly, he was in charge of all ABC radio, music and broadcast television networks, and it's on-demand stuff. The ABC's Director of News, Gavin Morris, tweeted that order has been restored after the announcement of the appointment. But has it? Well, no media watcher has been watching more closely than Jonathan Holmes, a former host of the ABC TV show Media Watch, who's just written a book all about the ABC called On Auntie. This book lifts the lid on what happened there last year to leave the broadcaster leaderless, and he offers some advice for his former employers, and indeed any other public broadcaster currently trying to make themselves fit for a digital future. I asked Jonathan Holmes, is the ABC getting back on track?
I think Ita Buttrose may well prove to be a good choice. Of course, we don't know much about what she's going to do. She comes from very much from the popular commercial media in her own background, and she hasn't done much in terms of running anything for about 20 years. So she's an unknown quantity, but she's extremely well known to the Australian public. She's very well known to the politicians, and her appointment was extraordinary. She was accepted across the board, so she has that ability to reach across the political spectrum.
Now, broadcasting organisations can go about their business independent of what's going on at top level. Has all this this evident political interference, right down to the individual jobs of senior jobs like political reporters being cast into doubt, has all this actually affected the journalism that's gone on at the ABC while there's been all this turmoil in the top level?
We still don't have evidence of actual political interference in the sense of someone in the government instructing the then chairman, Justin Milne, that if he wanted this money he was after for digital transformation, he would have to get rid of individual journalists. There's no evidence that that actually happened, and Justin Milne denies that it did. What's definitely true is that Milne himself, the chairman, was putting pressure on the managing director to get rid of these people, because he said, unless we get rid of them, we won't be able to get this money that I'm after. So that's the extent of the political influence. But the other thing that my book shows is that for the last year or two of the Turnbull government, Malcolm Turnbull's office and the Office of the Minister of Communications was putting enormous pressure on the ABC's political reporters, and particularly on its political editor, Andrew Probyn, for all kinds of alleged sins and trespasses, which a lot of which were really trivial. And that had a pretty powerful effect just on the stress levels of the ABC's political bureau in Canberra. And you know, that's quite evident. So,
The journalists felt they clearly weren't being backed up by the top brass, whether that they weren't prepared to go into bat for them and indeed for the organisation's independence.
That's exactly right. And there was a real absence of robust defence of the ABC, I think, vocally, especially from the managing director and the chairman.
Well, one of the most eye-opening parts of your book is when you go back over recent years and politicians, senior politicians, government ministers launching volleys of official complaints about the journalism of the ABC, alleging a lack of fairness, a lack of balance and bias, and so on, particularly in really important issues like national security and military matters and things like that. There was even an attempt to change the law. I think at one point a bill that hasn't been introduced before Parliament to change the requirement from being accurate and impartial to being fair, balanced, accurate and impartial. Is that entirely unreasonable, though, that the law should say that's what a public broadcaster should do?
As far as official complaints, using the official complaint mechanism, a communications minister way back in the early noughties at the time of the Second Gulf War was the one who started this. They put 64 complaints about the broadcasting by one radio program, AM, about the coverage of the Gulf War. And that took literally years to work its way through the system. That ploy, if you like, was used again in 2017, 2018 by Mitch Fifield, the communications minister under Turnbull, a whole series of official complaints using the complaints mechanism about six different things. If the complaint comes from the communications minister, who has the power to turn off the money tap, it has a bit more force than if it comes from Joe Blow in the street. On the second half of your question, though, this bill about fair and balanced was brought in specifically at the request of One Nation, which I expect your listeners know about One Nation.
Yes, we do.
The government was trying to get them to support its media bill that would give more freedom to commercial media to merge and so on and so forth. In response, the One Nation demanded a review of the ABC, which has happened and didn't find anything wrong, but B, this bill saying not only should we be accurate and impartial, but we should be fair and balanced. Yes, it sounds fair enough. It's not fair enough. What it is was One Nation trying to get a handle with which to attack the ABC on things like climate change. It's then Senator, a guy who's standing for the Senate again, Malcolm Roberts, someone who believes that climate change is the invention by dark forces to give world government to the United Nations. Now, if that bill got through, he would be able to claim that the ABC is not being balanced every time it publishes a bit of climate science without a riposte. You know what I mean?
Or yes.
The anti-vaxxers would be able to claim that we're not being balanced every time we publish a report about the merits of vaccination. This is a very dangerous path to go down. Balance is a word that I think is best avoided when you're discussing issues like bias and objectivity.
Yeah, at the end of the book, you do say one of the ABC's things it needs to address as it goes into this digital future is how to reach out to Australians of all political views.
I hate, in a way, to cater to those who claim that the ABC overall is biased, because I don't think it is. I think its news and current affairs are pretty straight down the middle and reasonably objective and giving people that straight information that they desperately need in this age of fake news.
Another point you make, Jonathan, is you say, I'm almost 70 years old, only fractionally above the average age who watch broadcast television on the ABC's main channel. That's a frightening statistic, you say. I think a decade ago you referred to that being around 55 years of age. And I think Gavin Morris, the head of news at ABC in the book, tells you the same thing's happened in news. The audience has just got old substantially older on the average over just recent years.
And to be clear, we're talking there about watching live free-to-air broadcasts.
This is also a problem here at RNZ. For years, they've thought to have, you know, super served an audience that turns out to be 55 and 60 plus.
Well, it's a problem for all media companies everywhere. I mean, just as everyone was saying a few years ago, print newspapers are going to be dead in 10 years. I think that broadcasting is actually dying quicker.
Yeah, you say even commercial television, you say, might have as little as a decade left. I mean, we look across the Tasman and see these huge businesses, you know, Channel 9 that now owns our formerly Fairfax newspapers, now branded here as Stuff. Really? Those commercial television companies could be dead in 10 years?
They're struggling to make money now. They really are. 9 is actually reasonably comfortable. 7 is struggling. And the reason 9 bought Fairfax, as much as anything, was it wanted to get its mitts on Stan, the digital streaming company that they were jointly owned. And that's the only future that 9 can see for itself, is to have a really successful streaming service to rival Netflix. And that's what it's hoping to do with Stan. But actual broadcast television, the whole business model where people watch the television live as it goes to air and have to sit through the ads, is practically dead. Apart from, this is why reality television is so important. There's only two things that people will watch live: sport and reality TV, where they've got a second screen where they're voting on people and commenting with each other and so on. Those are the only things that really pull in a live audience. And if you don't have a live audience, they're going to be skipping through your ads. And if they're skipping through your ads, your advertisers aren't going to bother to pay for the ads. So that whole business model is in peril. But if we don't have anyone listening to our radio, live radio, and we don't have anyone watching our live broadcast television, we have got to be reaching people on all these other platforms, many of which we don't control. You know, the ABC does not control Facebook. It does not control Apple News. It does not control Google News and all these other things that people are watching our material. It's a real challenge for everyone in any of these broadcasters, and every media organisation in the whole world is grappling with it.
Well, Jonathan, one of the fascinating parts of the book is where you talk about this project with a rather cool name, Jetstream. The departed chairman, Mr. Milne, you described as a pet project to invest in digital infrastructure at a cost of around, I think, $500 million Australian. So a huge project where everything, ABC's broadcasting, state orchestras, national archives, could all be available to everybody across Australia on this digital platform. I mean, that's quite something, isn't it?
It is. And what you want is an Australian streaming corporation and not an Australian broadcasting corporation, because broadcasting is dead. And basically, Milne's idea was everything that the ABC produces has to be quickly and seamlessly available for streaming online through multiple platforms, and it has to be there forever. It's such a monumental task. But is it necessary now? You know, what Justin Milne was saying is we're going to have to phase out broadcasting altogether in a few years. When we do that, the government can sell off all that spectrum to commercial users of various kinds, makes heaps of money. What we want is we want to get that money in advance to enable us to be able to provide everything online, so that we then can switch off the transmitters, which costs us a lot of money every year. That was the argument. But, you know, I think it's just too soon. I mean, I don't believe that the ABC's current public, especially those over 70 like me, are ready yet. But, you know, that's a calculation that people are going to have to make as we go along.
That was Jonathan Holmes, a former host of the ABC TV show Media Watch, who's just written a book about the ABC called On Auntie.